Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. To begin our program today, we're going to be taking a look at a couple of things that are related in some ways and kind of not in others. We'll be looking at lead concerns in hunting. We'll also be taking a look at youth hunting and efforts in that area here in Wisconsin. Keith Warnke is the hunting and shooting sports coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He's been with us a few times over the years. Great to have him back. And he deals in both these areas, which is one of the main reasons why I wanted to have him on, because both are kind of in the news. Certainly, if you have questions or comments about youth hunting or perhaps about lead concerns in hunting, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Keith Warnke, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
That's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, we talked a little bit yesterday on the program. I had Gary Engberg on, fisherman and guide, and so the issue of lead came up. But from your perspective, let's talk about what are the concerns here with hunting and fishing and lead.
Well, from the perspective of a resource management agency, lead is toxic, and it's a long-lasting toxin that we as hunters and anglers deposit into the environment every year through use of lead sinkers, lead fishing jigs, use of lead shot, use of lead bullets. And we've recognized that this has been a problem for years, and we also recognize that lead impacts basically a lot of critters out there on the landscape. They can pick it up through ingestion of spent lead shot. There's many instances of common loons picking up lead from sinkers and jigs, bald eagles picking up lead from bullets and deer carcasses, and this lead has an impact on those animals. It can cause mortality, can cause illness. So the impact that lead has on the environment is something that we think is very important for conservationists to just know more about.
And there are restrictions in some instances for using or not using lead, I guess we could say. For example, waterfowl hunting.
Right. Currently, lead is prohibited for use in waterfowl hunting nationwide. And on state DNR-managed lands in Wisconsin, you cannot use lead for mourning dove hunting. And there are some restrictions on use of lead shot on federal lands across the United States. There are also several states to our west that also regulate or limit the use of lead on their public lands as well.
So what do you think? Are we going to be expanding that or making it, or are we pushing more for education on the part of our hunters?
Yeah, the department right now, our objective is to just explore all possibilities to reduce the use of lead in our own activities as a department, and also to encourage voluntary limitations of the use of lead, and then that's going to limit or reduce the amount of lead that's discharged into the environment through hunting, fishing activities. So it's an educational program at this point.
And you're trying to sort of set an example then?
Yeah, we're trying to lead by example when we reduce the amount of lead that we use as an agency and make sure that we're distributing lead-free sinkers and jigs through free fishing weekends and fishing programs and distributing lead-free ammunition through our Learn to Hunt programs. So we're leading by that example of trying to reduce the discharge of lead.
Let's take a call from Tom in Green Bay. Tom, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I've got a question about lead on the consumer.
Okay.
I've always thought about, whether I want to use the copper-coated shot and if I accidentally eat a BB or something, is that a problem?
That is a very good question that I think you should consult with someone who has a lot more expertise than I have on it. I can tell you that my understanding is the level of lead toxicity is going to be related to sort of the surface area, the size of the lead piece you ingest. A pellet, people have been ingesting lead pellets, and that lead can get into your system. We know that. There's also a concern with fragments of lead from fragmented bullets in venison. So these are concerns. It makes it easiest, and what I've done, in my own hunting, I've just switched over to all non-toxic shot as of several years ago, so I don't have to not worry about ingesting lead at all. Right.
And you've had good results with a shot that's not lead shot.
I've had terrific results with it. It's a little different than lead shot. If you're used to shooting with lead shot for several years, you will need to make an adjustment. But, yeah, it's very effective once you learn how to use it.
Mm-hmm. Is the copper-coated shot, is that considered non-toxic, or is that lead still?
Yep, copper-coated shot is still lead. It just has a thin copper coating around the outside of it to prevent shot deformation. So that still is lead and comes with the same kind of risks and doesn't qualify as non-toxic shot for waterfowl hunting.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn a little bit to youth hunting. You're sort of the coordinator for hunting and shooting sports for the DNR. Maybe talk about what areas you focus on before we even get into the youth part.
Well, I focus right now on hunting and shooting sports coordination, and that really has a lot to do with evaluating who the members of our current hunting population are, who's hunting, what the participation rates are, where participation rates in hunting are going, and then trying to develop and implement programs that are going to help encourage folks to take up hunting, take up the shooting sports in Wisconsin. So we do have youth hunts and learned hunts and mentored hunting, and we're working on more outreach and more programs to reach bigger segments of the population.
What are there are regulations certainly relating to youth hunting. Talk a little about that.
Well, the primary regulation is the minimum age right now for hunting is 10 years old. And you can participate in a mentored hunt when you're 10 years old. That means you have an adult with 5 years of experience who is sitting right next to you within arm's length. You only have one gun between the two of you, and a 10-year-old who has not passed hunter safety, hunter education at this point, can participate in that hunt. So that opportunity is out there. Mentored hunting opportunity is also out there for adults who haven't participated in hunting in the past and don't have a hunter's education, hunter safety certificate. They can be taken on a mentored hunt as well. We have several youth hunt weekends, youth turkey hunting weekend, youth waterfowl hunting weekend, and a youth deer hunting weekend come to mind right away, where we encourage these mentored hunting opportunities as well. Beyond that, we have a separate program that's called the Learn to Hunt program, where sporting groups, rod and gun clubs, chapters of the National Turkey Federation put together an educational program, schedule an educational program, recruit some youth in or some novice hunters in who haven't hunted before and put them through this program and then take them out on a guided hunt. So there are several programs there to try to get new folks started in the hunting tradition.
Let's go to Phil in Mount Horeb. Phil, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking this call. It's curious and coincidental that the subject that you've just covered is the one that I called about. I am deeply concerned about the mentored 10-year-old deer hunting program. I think that putting in the hands of a young person, 10 years old, even with an experienced hunter at arm's length, is a disaster waiting to happen. And I'm concerned that we as a state have allowed this. I would think that maybe a mentored hunting, perhaps with a 22 in a hunting squirrels, would be a tolerable risk to take. But this idea of putting a gun like that into the hands of somebody who, you know, I think that even adult hunters, being totally forthright, have had accidental trigger releases, and the constant effort that is required, the disciplined mental activity involved in carrying a weapon of that degree of potential harm, I think it just is—it's irrational to use to let 10-year-olds hold such a weapon. What do you think about a squirrel hunt instead of a deer hunt in terms of encouraging young people to get involved in hunting?
Okay, thanks for calling, Phil. Comments? Go ahead, Keith.
Well, first of all, I think I absolutely agree with a squirrel hunt for youth. I think starting off by hunting small game is a perfect way to get into hunting. It really teaches about those things, hunter safety, gun safety, and all of that. Small game hunting could be a great gateway to getting into the larger game hunting. Secondly, I think Phil has some very valid concerns, and they are concerns that we all have when we're taking a youth out hunting. And that's a very important decision that the adult has to make. Certainly, some kids might not be ready to handle a weapon at age 10, and that's the evaluation that the adult makes. I know when I took my own daughter out when she was 10 years old a couple of years ago, we were very careful to go through education, practice, trial, and drilling to make sure that she understood the safety aspects of using that weapon to go deer hunting. And then I did sit there with her the whole time, and we continued, as we were hunting, going through those safety aspects. And it is a very important responsibility, but the adult mentor really has to take that seriously, and it can be a very safe program.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call again. Dan and Sean, I want to give you a chance. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Actually, I have two comments.
Okay.
One of my comments are about using lead for hunting in Wisconsin. That's a coincidence. I actually work for a company here in northeast Wisconsin that is providing non-lead projectiles for the military. In fact, the military by the year 2015 is not going to use any lead projectiles at all. The military has set aside almost $2 million to clean up every year their firing ranges. And I just think that's kind of interesting, you know, with the military, you're actually killing people, and they're going to go green. And the other one is your caller just before about the 10-year-old hunt. I'm nearly 60 years old, and I started hunting when I was 10. And I have to say that, personally, because I started hunting at such a young age, I kind of lost the fire to hunt as I got older. I think when you're 10 years old, it's hard to appreciate hunting and the traditions and things. And that's my comment. I'll listen to you off the air.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot for calling. It raises a couple of issues here to discuss, Keith.
Yeah, it does. And to the point of the military and their use of lead ammunition, the Department of Natural Resources law enforcement program is also, over time, will be phasing out the use of lead and its target ammunition as well. That's a very good point to bring up, that in target shooting is generally where most of the rounds are used. So it's important to look at that one. For 10-year-old hunters, you know, I think that everyone looks at hunting differently, and we certainly see, even with starting hunting at 12 years old, an increase in the number of participants, 12, 13, 14 years old, and I think we're seeing kids trying it out and deciding whether or not they like it. For a few years, that increases. Then as they turn 15, 16, 17, the number of hunters participating declines, and I think that's some folks deciding that, you know, hunting might not be for them. Once they hit about 20 years old, then participation year to year to year is very strong. The same people keep coming back. So I think part of the 10-year-old, the objective with 10-year-old hunting is to get more people out there to try it out, more people out there trying out hunting and deciding whether or not they want to continue.
Talking today with Keith Warnke, hunting and shooting sports coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our on-air producer, as we talk about lead concerns in hunting and as we also visit about youth hunting. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here as we talk about youth hunting, as we talk about lead, using lead in shot, with our guest, Keith Warnke of the Department of Natural Resources. We had an email from Pete, who says, we know that lead is detrimental to the environment, so why doesn't the DNR simply push for a statewide ban on the use of lead shot and sinkers?
We do agree. We know that lead is detrimental to the environment, but the most important part, I think, of going forward with moving away from using lead is a voluntary program and education, getting folks educated and seeing how lead is detrimental to the environment, how long it lasts, and then learning what they can do to change the amount of lead, reduce the amount of lead that's discharged. That will create real ownership for going to non-toxic shot.
And we had sort of, in going along with a comment from earlier, Gary had emailed and said some states have mandated non-lead shot for ranges, like skeet ranges or trap ranges and so forth. We don't do that yet. Is there any move that you know of to do that?
I'm not aware of any move to go ahead and do that at this point, no.
Corey in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Keith. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. You know, you talk about these youth hunts and introducing young people to these, to a new sport. But my concern is down here in this part of the state where we have these CWD zones and we want to introduce these younger hunters to this resource, is the fact that we know that even though it's scientifically not proven yet, but we're reading a lot about it again, like in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and whatnot, about how, you know, there might be a crossover of this disease to humans maybe in the future. I'm wondering why the state doesn't offer free testing of all those animals that are taken in those zones, considering the fact that not only do hunters consume that, but if you don't want that animal, you donate it to a shelter, which could possibly expose somebody else to the same disease that you're trying to eradicate.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get a comment from Keith on that. Well,
I think that's a very good point, and I am not positive on this, but my last understanding was we can and do offer free testing for hunters for those animals. If you can get the deer head to us or to a drop-off location, it will be tested.
Yeah. There may be is there a charge? I think there's a charge associated with it.
I don't believe there has ever been a charge associated with that. And I think what the caller should really do is check the DNR Chronic Wasting Disease website to find out more information about that and find out more folks to contact.
Yeah. So, right, if you go to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources website and then
search on CWD.
Search on CWD, you're going to find that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey. Vance in Glidden, Wisconsin. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'd just like to comment on the mentored hunt. I took my son this year, and I think it is, it's a very great thing. A lot of people, what they don't think about it is it takes the right kind of person to be the mentor and the right, you know, the right youth that wants to be in the outdoors and wants to do it. He was successful. He's 10 years old. He shot a spike with his bow. One shot, I went 90 yards, and he shot a six-pointer with the rifle. It was an awesome experience. I got them both on video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, and your point about the mentors is well taken. It's very important, you know, that we don't expect children to step out of the family room or step out of the video game and step into hunting and enjoy it right away. People build up an appreciation for hunting and outdoor experiences by spending time outside when they're very young or spending time outside in the summertime, camping, boating, hiking, and that naturally translates into an interest in hunting. And hopefully what we're doing here with mentored hunting is providing that door for folks to step through and continue their interest in the outdoors and their interest in hunting.
Yep. There you go. Thank you, Vance, for calling. And, you know, the number, I can remember Tom Heberlein from the Department of Rural Sociology saying, I can ask three questions and tell whether or not a person hunts, and, are you from a rural area? Did your dad hunt? Are you a male?
Right.
And that's
right.
Pretty much, if you're from a rural area and your dad hunted and you're a male, you probably hunted.
It's very strongly linked to hunting participation, and I think right there points out some of the areas we can look into when we're looking to recruiting or the next generation of hunters or retaining our current hunters. At least 50% of the population is female, yet only about 9% of our deer hunters are currently female. I suspect there is a lot of opportunity there for females, young girls, older women who are interested in taking up hunting.
And I want to go back to Dan in Southwest Wisconsin has a comment on the testing. Dan, hi.
Hello. I just on the deer being tested for chronic wasting disease. I got 3 deer this year, and if you take it to the appropriate stations, they do take out the lymph nodes, and they send those in free of charge. And then within, about 30 to 50 days, I get a little postcard in the mail saying that it was negative or positive, and this is free of charge. You just have to take it to a registration station that takes the lymph nodes out.
Thank you, Dan. And, you know, I brought up the question, so, you know, is it really free? So I'm glad you called to verify what Keith said, which is, Keith Warnke said, no, it's free, and that is exactly correct. So thank you very much for sort of backing up Keith here and getting me out of
a little mess there.
Thanks, Dan. Mark in Grant County, let's go to you. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, why would you not want a 10-year-old to take hunter safety?
Mm-hmm.
From my knowledge and the gentlemen I know that do teach it are some of the most experienced hunters and gun people that teach kids about guns, not necessarily stalking or you know, being in the woods, but they teach about the gun safety, how to handle. And I'm 50 years old, and I have to have hunter safety. Why would a 10-year-old not?
Yeah,
that's a good point. And we do want 10-year-olds to take hunter safety, absolutely. The mentored program was set aside so that you can take a 10-year-old out without having to pass hunter safety or take hunter safety yet to provide them with that experience. It certainly, I don't believe the intent of the legislature was to set it up as an alternative to hunter education courses. What we're hoping to do is take down maybe an obstacle to trying out hunting by saying you don't have to have hunter safety first. You can go on a mentored hunt and remain in arm's length of your mentor. However, if you want to eventually hunt by yourself or carry, you know, have a gun for each hunter out there, then you definitely have to pass hunter safety.
All right.
That doesn't mean the mentor is as experienced as the teachers of hunter safety.
Yeah, the hunter safety instructors are some of the best. I mean, that is a great bunch of people that's very valuable to educating kids in gun safety and hunting safety. This way, what the mentored hunt allows is for the mentor to make that decision themselves and make that commitment themselves, perhaps to their son or daughter or to a neighbor's kid, to just give them the taste of it starting out.
There you go. Thanks, Mark. David in Surrey, we go to you now. Hi, David.
Hi. I was just wondering if this 10-year-old mentor hunting wasn't just basically a revenue thing, bring in more money because the DNR is losing so many hunters because of a lot of things.
All right.
Yeah, it's a definite point that you make that the number of hunters is declining. Number of small game hunters is dropping by 2 or 3% a year. Number of deer hunters is probably declining by the same 2 to 3% a year. The 10-year-old hunting, certainly the licenses are relatively inexpensive and are not a huge revenue source. The other point that I think we can make is kids who started hunting at 10 was a big chunk 2 years ago when we first started the program because there are all these 10-year-olds there. But these folks are, you know, many of them, I believe, are likely to want to start hunting at 12 as well. But certainly we want to try to get them started hunting earlier to get them as a strong hunting participant. And I'm sure conservation dollars in this state for land management, land preservation, and some of the things you see as far as fishing in lakes and law enforcement, those things are paid for by hunters. So it's paid for by hunters, and it's very important that we be able to continue to do those conservation things. We also have a hunting impact in Wisconsin of over $2 billion per year that supports 25,000 jobs in the state. Hunters support 25,000 jobs in the state. So furthering that and furthering that benefit to rural economies and ensuring that by making sure we have a strong hunting generation, I think that those are important things to do.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot, David, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to switch gears a little in a way and talk with you about the second annual Hunting Heritage Conference. As that relates to this, too. It's coming up February 18th and 19th, so it's not this weekend, but the weekend after. What's the focus of that gathering?
Yeah, that's a good point and a good question. Next weekend at Stony Creek Inn and Conference Center in Rothschild, south of Wausau, we'll be hosting the second annual Hunting Heritage Conference. The focus of this is to bring together representatives of many hunting groups, hunting organizations, rod and gun clubs throughout the state to talk about, share ideas, gain information about the future of hunting in Wisconsin, about how to recruit hunters, how to retain hunters. We're going to have a keynote speaker Friday night who has a passion for recruiting and retaining hunters, ensuring our next generation. We're going to have talks about research that's going on in Wisconsin about hunter recruitment, about Wisconsin citizens' attitudes toward hunters and hunting. We're going to have almost an hour dedicated to a how-to session, how to host a Learn to Hunt event, because that's one of what we think is one of the obstacles or one of the barriers to folks getting involved in hosting a Learn to Hunt. So we're going to have somebody there who's going through the logistics and planning how to put together your Learn to Hunt event. And then we're going to have talks from Explore Bow Hunting, which is a program from the Archery Trade Association, the Outdoor Roadmap, which helps people navigate hunting sites across the web and find licenses, and then also talks about the Trailblazer program from the United States Sportsmen's Alliance. Helps that program is intended to try to get people involved and interested in the outdoors. So we're hoping to share a lot of information and gain a lot of information at this Hunting Heritage Conference that we can send, that folks can leave this conference and go back to their rod and gun club, their pheasant group, their turkey group, and implement a Learn to Hunt and have the confidence to get more people involved in the outdoors.
And can anybody participate in this?
Yeah, registration is still open. We don't have any rooms left in our block, so if you're going to register, you're on your own for getting a room. But if you do register, we can provide meals. Your best-off registration procedure is to call Brenda at 608-267-7509. And Brenda will get you registered and signed up, and she will be able to provide you with all the information. So please do register. We get a good count of people who are coming. Again, that number is 608-267-7509.
7509.
Yep.
Okay, and it's the 18th and 19th.
18th and 19th of February.
Let's go back to the phones and to Mike in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Our afternoon, I guess it is. I just wanted to call in support of your youth hunt.
Sure.
I mean, laws are a little different in Minnesota, and my kids are all grown, so I don't know what they currently are. But used to be a kid could start at any age small game hunting with an adult or guardian. And in my case, I started at 7. My kids started at 7 and 8. But the difference, in all cases, they carried their own gun. I had one, or my dad had one. But in all cases, the kid didn't have any ammunition. You take a 7 or an 8-year-old, and they're proud as heck to be walking through their woods with mom or dad, or mom and dad. And they're carrying a gun.
They're
learning how to carry it safely, and it's unloaded. And when an opportunity presents itself to take small game, the parent gives them a shell.
Huh? Yep, that's
and if they take the shot or they don't, you know, if they don't get a shot, they unload it, give the shell back to mom or dad. And I don't think you can start them young enough, because at 7, 8, even 10, and I've raised 3 kids to adulthood, they listen to you. I mean, what you say, they believe.
Yeah.
You wait till they're 14, 15, or 16.
They don't listen so well.
You can tell them the sun's out, and they'll have to look first before they believe you.
That's a really good point, Mike, about having, you know, taking kids out in the woods and teaching gun safety when they're really young. And, but, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, I think fortunately laws have changed to provide more regulation for when kids can start hunting. But these kind of youth hunts and mentored hunts really do provide that one-on-one, low-pressure opportunity to take a child out or take somebody new out and really teach them the safety and the ethics of hunting.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike, for calling. I appreciate it. I want to give Larry and Elkhorn a chance to join in. Larry, hi.
Good morning. I have two things. First of all, I really agree with the last gentleman that was on there. My main point is I don't believe anybody should be allowed to go into the woods hunting unless they can qualify to shoot properly. Like in the military, you're a marksman, sharpshooter, or an expert. I feel as though if you can't at least qualify at the minimum as a marksman, you shouldn't be able to be in the woods, you know, packing a gun that can shoot anything. Secondly, I can remember I was 12 years old, and I used to walk to school, my grade school, carrying my Sweet 16, hunting alongside of the road. When I came to the school grounds, I would unload it, get it to Mr. Reich, the principal. He'd put it behind his desk. At the end of the school, myself and two other kids would go out behind the school and hunt pheasants and ducks because that was some of the best hunting there was there. We had all learned when we were quite young, 8, 9, 10 years old, that we were hunting with our parents, and we learned the responsibility of a weapon, that it was a deadly thing. And getting back to the first point, if you can at least qualify and hit your target, rather than that, I believe that goes with even with the bow and the arrow. There are so many animals out there that are running around with sticks sticking out of them because a person can't hit the target. Mm-hmm. So if you were able to qualify, I think that'd be pretty important.
No.
There are certainly programs where hunters have to qualify in marksmanship challenges in other countries. I don't mm-hmm. know about any in the United States, although there may be some advanced hunter education programs where people would be required to qualify like that. Currently, the state law does not provide for that, does not require that in Wisconsin. As far as, you know, taking your gun to school and hunting on your way home, that was a generation ago, and frankly, I used to do it too. On cool enough days, we would leave the dogs in the car, and when we were done with school, we'd run out and do some pheasant hunting quick.
Mark also emailed and said that he used to put his gun, hunt on the way to school, put his gun above the coat hook in his cubby, as did all the other classmates who hunted.
I think that goes, though, no, that's not going to happen anymore, but that does go to show the importance of an understanding of gun safety and a familiarity with firearms. If you have this familiarity with firearms, you have a much better respect and a much better understanding for what they are used for and what they are not used for.
Let's turn to, before we go to Karen here, I just want to mention, Keith was talking about that annual Hunting Heritage Conference. If you didn't get the information down, just go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show, and we have Judith posted a link to the conference, so you can get right to the conference from my Facebook page. So just go to The Larry Mealer Show, and we'll get you hooked up. Now let's go to Karen in Jefferson. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I agree with most of the gentlemen that preceded me. By the time I was 12 years old, I had gone hunting with my dad. By the time I was 12 years old and was at that time, you had to, before you could carry a gun, you had to be 12. And by then, I was interested in the Beatles and didn't want to go hunting anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that the age of reason is good, although each kid, I think, comes into it on its own. But what I really called about is if the mentors could teach some conservation etiquette, if you will, when they're on public hunting grounds and private hunting grounds. I know of... I have some land that's adjacent to public hunting grounds, and I have been cleaning up beer parties and so forth on my and other litter, like from Hardee's or somewhere. I mean, it seems like they bring fast food into the that's the big one. It's a lot of fast food and occasional beer party, and I'm not and they should not be doing that in front of the 10-year-olds. And then, like, even if somebody's smoking out there, to stick the cigarette butts in the land. And I think more land, private landowners would come along. And I have never heard this issue before, but every spring, I tell you, I'm out there on my tree lines. I have even a tree line separating my property and have found, different
litter.
Remnants of bullets and so forth in the tree line that's completely... splitting my property, and I really would appreciate the mentors emphasizing, the environmental etiquette out there, and mm-hmm. at the same time, and I feel that some of that's gotten lost with maybe the teenagers going out on their own, or even some of the younger hunters in their 20s. because I have noticed this for a while. And we do have our hunters out there that never had the benefit of any male mentor or not.
Yeah. Comments, Keith?
Well, I think that's the points are very well taken, and she makes a very good point about cleaning up after yourself and hunters, mentors, teaching new hunters conservation ethics. I think we all do try to do that, but it's something that definitely needs to be reinforced. I think there's another possible benefit here in that where Karen lives, she could get in contact with a local rod and gun club or a local hunting group and maybe suggest a cleanup day. That they come out and clean up the public land, and that would really show, bring along the kids, show some conservation ethic there.
Yeah, that's actually a very good idea. And I would guess Karen Jefferson area there, she'd probably get a hold of the DNR office, if nothing else, and they probably get the names of the organizations.
She could get some organization names from the DNR office. I know there are several clubs in the Jefferson area, and
yeah, there are.
Probably one or more of them would be interested in cooperating in this.
I would think so. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Reed in Madison, on to you. Hi, Reed.
Good morning, fellas. I grew up in Louisiana, and the years it was called the Sportsman's Paradise. And I learned hunting and fishing in the family. And it just sounds to me like the discussion around the age at which a youngster can be out in the woods hunting and so on kind of springs from how and the people who are advocating that are coming from a place where we learned hunting safety, we learned good marksmanship, we learned conservation, etc., long before we were out there in the woods. And when we started out in the woods, it was small game.
Yeah.
And like the one fella said, the youngster didn't have a loaded firearm. The youngster carried the gun, and if there was a clean shot, a good shot on a rabbit or a squirrel, then the grown-up handed the gun to the youngster and monitored everything. I'm totally against putting a 30 caliber rifle or a shotgun in the hands of a child as young as 10 years old.
Because we're running out of time here, I think we got your point, Reed, and you want to make a comment, Keith?
Well, I think it's a point well taken again about starting in small game, but it goes further to the fact that Reed's point was these kids were out in the woods, they were learning conservation, they were learning gun safety all well before they were old enough to hunt. And that is an important key as we consider recruiting new hunters or starting up a new hunter. It takes a long time, and it takes a lot of commitment.
Always a pleasure, Keith. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Just remember the annual Hunting Heritage Conference coming up the 18th and 19th of February. And go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show, and we'll give you a place to go to sign up for that, or at least to look into it for some more information. Keith Warnke, our guest today. Keith is the hunting and shooting sports coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. There's the report out now. I was looking at it. A little depressing, to be perfectly honest, but I'll tell you what, Richard Lathrop and John Magnuson will be in to talk about maybe some of the depressing parts, but also some of the positive things that we can take from this report. Larry Mealer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.